Well, we have had many anticipated Mondays on this show, many Mondays in show history where we cannot wait to get on the air at 4 o'clock. And I don't know if this ranks in the top three, top five, top 10, but it's in the conversation for many different reasons, including the fact that our buddy Mike Johnson is back in here. And MJ, it's been a while, buddy. Good to see you as always.
Listen, I'm happy to be here, but I'm very happy to be here today. So I don't want to get in the way of, it's a big show. We've got lots to revisit over the weekend and lots to get to. So let's get to it.
Yes, let's get to it. The O-Dog is in the house. There he is, looking very good and very happy to be here, as always, on a Monday. We missed you on Friday, buddy, but it's good to have you back. And Noodles is off today. He's calling another game, as always, so we'll get him back in the fold tomorrow. But what's on your mind this afternoon?
I possibly made the worst call or take in sports radio history. On Wednesday, I said, do you want to bet a hunch that Bryson DeChambeau misses the cut? I thought Bay Hill. I thought slashing it all over the rough. I thought about number six putting 10 in the water and making a 25 on the hole. What does he do? He got Michael Jordan on me and said that irritated me a little bit, or that bothered me. And not only does he make the cut, he wins the tournament. It's like I feel like I've lost all privileges to make a golf comment at all.
Well, I don't think that's true. What I like about the take is you've got the stones to make the take, right? It happens. We had someone write in after, because you wrote that tweet last night after he won, about 5 minutes after he won, you tweeted out something along the lines of worst take of all time. While you were tweeting that, I was putting together a tweet that we may have established that very sentiment, and we'll address it today on the show. And after I sent out my tweet saying we may have just established the worst take in show history, someone immediately writes in saying you could say that about three times a week. Every week on this show, that someone says something so outrageously stupid. So you're not alone. It's just in the moment. You had the take. You had information. You brought that up on Wednesday, too. You were speaking with people down at Bay Hill. There was not a lot of faith in DeChambeau, and he hadn't been playing so well. But, man, did he turn it on over the weekend. And on six, he went for it twice, not directly at the green, but close enough. And love him or hate him, you've got a feeling about the guy, and I think he is a cash cow for the PGA Tour.
Dude,
he's very compelling.
They are reaching and stretching. You could tell, because when Tiger Woods is not there, obviously they have nothing to compare that to, nothing to draw the people in, nothing for the viewer. There's no Dustin Johnson. Some other big-name players weren't there. They latched on to this guy and was like, this is our moneymaker right now. We've got to show the drives. We've got to show the fist pumping. He did have some outrageous comments yesterday that were caught on the microphone, which we'll get into later. But that's their go-to guy. What else would people want to see than the 355-yard drives? Whether they go in the rough or not. That's something you want to attach yourself to. What I think the tour is saying, or the television broadcast, it's kind of like, what is this guy going to do next? Like, that's right. What they got to put on the TV.
That's exactly
good,
right?
Good or bad, right? He might hit it like eight fairways over, or he might hit it 400 yards over the water. And you hate to draw the parallel to Happy Gilmore. But like the premise of that movie, this guy who hits it, 8 trillion miles and then draws in a different kind of crowd. And I wonder, with DeChambeau and his the way he plays and his whole act, if it doesn't help draw in a different kind of crowd. Like that scene on Saturday where he was teeing it up on six and the ball's in the air and he's trying to root it over the water and the crowd, like that was not normal kind of golf course etiquette behavior environment. But that might not be a bad thing for the PGA Tour. They've got to transition out of Tiger and find a way to keep growing and keep driving revenues and everything else. And I just, he's compelling theater. Love him or hate him, the NASCAR Ricky Bobby special when he wins, like the whole bit is just
everything about it.
It
gets
Johnny.
About
I don't think the long drives or what if you want to get into his competitive advantage. I don't think the long drives are his advantage because they don't always go straight. Like most guys that hit the ball that far, they're just kind of all over the place. I think where he gains advantage on the fields are 186 yards out, he's not slashing a 5-iron into the lip of the bunker like most even tour pros are doing out of that rough. He's grabbing a pitching wedge like Tiger did back in the day, and he's floating it up in the air 186 yards away from the pin, and it lands and stops, and he's got a 10-footer for birdie, where every other guy in the field cannot do that.
Well, if that's you remember exactly back, what it is.
Yeah.
Remember when Vijay Singh was the best player in the world? Briefly, when Tiger, you know, I don't know when that was, like early 2000s. And his whole thing was like, drive it down as far as you can, and then take your chance. If in the fairway, go green light.
Smash
it's
and gouge.
Not, it's so
smash
close.
Smash and gouge.
Smash and gouge. And like, take your chances with a wedge or a 9-iron, because you'll be able to control it enough to get it on the green. And if, as opposed to laying further back where you got to, you know, as what you're talking about, you're trying to hit 6 or 7 irons, and it's just a different game.
He's playing a completely different game. And I think the Happy Gilmore analogy works, but I think you have to combine both of the main characters in that movie. He hits the ball and maybe reacts on the course like Happy. When he's in front of a microphone, he's Shooter McGavin. Like, it's kind of fake. It's more about the sponsors. It's putting on, you know, the tears. I'm getting a little bit teary-eyed here about Arnold Palmer. It's like,
I'm gonna cry.
That kind of feels like something Shooter McGavin would say.
Dude, so, there were some guys on the podcast, Hayes, yesterday, that as soon as something like that happened, like one of the comments, I think it was the No Laying Up podcast, was like, everything about this is cringeworthy. The celebrations, the fist pumps, the speeches, the reference to the Tiger text, the sponsors, it's all cringe.
It's Shooter McGavin. That's Shooter McGavin, but he hits the ball like Happy Gilmore. So it makes it even more intriguing. It allows for even more, I think, storytelling, because you're going to get people that love it, people that hate it, but people that need to see it, myself included. He is the most interesting person on tour, and I don't think there's a close second. I don't think there's anyone that's even close. The next closest comparison or compelling storyline is, will Jordan Spieth decide to play golf on Sunday when he's in contention at a tournament? Because Spieth is a household name in the golf world. He's been around for a long time. He won, unlike anyone outside of Tiger, his first 2 or 3 years on tour. And now he just completely melts down on Sunday. It happened again yesterday. But DeChambeau, it's a wild story. And we will touch on that throughout the afternoon. We'll look back on some of our other takes that kind of stick out. I remember early in the year I was predicting that Tom Brady would not be anywhere close to a top 10 quarterback, which was kind of similar to your DeChambeau stance, because you had DeChambeau missing the cut, then he wins the tournament. I was convinced Brady would fall off and he wins a Super Bowl. And I saw a report this morning that he is willing to rework his contract to lower the cap hit, because he's got a $25 million cap hit, with the anticipation of going after Odell Beckham Jr., who is not a free agent, is under contract, coming off a major injury in Cleveland. But still, I like the fact that he's ambitious, and Tom's like, let's double down here. We've got all these weapons. Let's keep going.
Weren't they also talking about more than next year?
But that's what I was getting to. It's on top of what he wants to do with the cap hit. In order to get there, he wants to add on like 2 or 3 years on the deal, but not like a disingenuous contract extension, like not just kind of materialistic or, you know, fraudulent, where you know he's only going to play a year or two and then bail on it. He actually wants to go through with it. Like, he thinks he can play 3 or more years, and who am I to say he can't, considering what he just did? It's pretty wild that we're still talking about contract extensions for a guy who's 43 years old.
What about the wife's comments, though? Hasn't she said to him 15 times, what more do you need to prove?
Yes, but clearly he's not listening. He didn't listen 5 years ago. He's not going to now. So those reports come out every year. Giselle urging Tom to stop. And he's like, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to keep playing.
I wonder if it's almost like he's like a competitive junkie. Like, obviously, it can't be furthering his legacy. The legacy is cemented as the winningest, greatest quarterback ever. Like, I don't know what more you could be chasing if that's an idea. It's got to be, like, he just loves the competition. And that would never be able to be replicated. And that's fascinating. Imagine him playing 2-3 more years extension beyond next year. And Odell Beckham, though, while he is under contract, Hayes, I think Cleveland's in a bit of a sticky spot. They might be willing to get rid of him because they can't waive him because he's injured. So he's not going to clear a physical. So you can't waive him yet. So you have to pay him if you just let him go. They might be willing to trade him kind of like fourth round kind of material, you know, like just get a draft pick and get rid of his contract. So we'll see, because the offense in Cleveland was actually better without him. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I mean, most teams realize this, that like wide receivers come and go. What you need is a quarterback. You need an offensive line. You need a pass rush, quality coaching. And they have Jarvis Landry there. They've spent on the tight end. They have the best 1-2 punch in the backfield in terms of a run game. So I could see him moving on, and I could see maybe Tampa kicking tires. Why not? But you're right about Brady. The way he's wired, it's just about I need it. Like, I need to play, and I need to compete. And he's not proving anyone wrong anymore. Although I guess he is from an age standpoint. Like, maybe that's his next challenge. I'm going to prove I can keep doing it at 43, 44, 45, which truly is uncharted territory. No one has ever done it. No one ever gets there.
Hayes, we talked on a 40, Monday, Hayes. He got dummied in Denver in a playoff game, I think. It might have been the year that Denver won the Super Bowl. And we were like, that's probably it for that guy. He looked terrible. He was throwing the ball over the place. And it was just not even close. Not even close, man.
It's so true. I mean, that would have been in 16, 17. Like, that was 4 years ago. And he's found a way to get everything back on on the rails. And, you know.
How smart is he about, like, picking his spots and choosing his timing? Like, he left New England seemingly at a pretty good time to leave.
Yep.
And he chose Tampa, an organization that was going to let him kind of do what he wants. Bruce Arians, very much an offensive coach, had weapons, had a defense, had an offensive. Like, he just, you know, you can't be playing for just any team at 43. You got to play for a Tom Brady kind of team that offers the support that he needs while he's still incredible. Like, he can, there's some things he can't do, but he just finds a way to make sure that his team protects him as well as has a chance to win.
That's right. Yeah, and they have a great offensive line, which they established a year ago. They're going to get the weapons. They're going to keep going for it. It's not about money. So he'll restructure his deal. The cap hit will drop. It'll open up $8 to $10 million, and they'll go spend, and they'll pick up a big player. And guys will go there on the cheap. That's another thing. You want to be with Brady. You want to be in Tampa. And, you know, with that line of thinking, Steph Curry had a great quote yesterday, and the three-point competition for me was the only thing noteworthy of yesterday. It didn't have the same feeling of your standard All-Star game.
Nobody wanted to be there.
Exactly. It was simply a formality. It happened. They got away with it. By all accounts, no positive tests. They're out. The season will resume early this week or mid this week, and they'll move on with their lives. The dunk contest was terrible. The game itself, I guess Giannis did something historic, but for the most part, it won't be remembered. Yeah. But Steph Curry was the story because of the three-point competition, which did feel
important
and the way it should and the way it generally would. Great three-point shooters were there, and the best of the best won the event. And he said afterwards, quote, "I have a lot to accomplish, nothing to prove," end quote, which applies to Brady. Like, that's it. You're not proving anything to anybody. Steph Curry doesn't have to prove anything to anybody, but you still have a lot to accomplish. You're still pushing your stuff. You still want to prove some naysayers wrong. You want to win more titles. You want to win more events. You want to be an all-star. You want to be a pro bowler. Like, these are things that are always still available to an athlete. Go chase them. And if you can get them, you just add to your legacy.
Like, another three-point ride. I was thinking, like, when I was a kid, I used to love NBA All-Star Weekend. Like, I used to live for the dunk off. Like, I used to live for it. I'd watch it. I'd tape it. I'd watch it again. Three-point shooting the same. And I was wondering, like, what is it about the dunk off that just feels so empty now compared? And I think it's because the best players in the world used to be the dunk off. Like, it was Jordan and Dominique Wilkins and, you know, the best guys. And
they're going digging underneath another layer to get the guys to do the dunks.
And right.
Quite honestly, if you're just a casual fan,
do you know who Obi Toppin is, though?
I was just going to say that, Johnny. Right. You're looking and saying, that's not even a, if you're a casual fan like myself, you're like, I don't even know that name.
But if you watch the 3-point contest, you see Steve Curry, you see Steph Curry, you see Mike Conley Jr. And also you see like the best shooters in the league. It would be the equivalent of the NHL All-Star game doing the fastest skater or the hardest shot. And, like, you know, Michael Grabner is the fastest skater. And you're like, I want Connor McDavid or Matt Barzell to be the fastest skater. I don't want, you know, Michael Grabner. All respect to Michael Grabner. Right? You know, if the hardest shot, I want to be Shea Weber, Zdeno Chara. I don't want it to be Ryan Pulock. You know, like you want the best guys to be in those competitions. In the NBA now, the dunk contest, there's no LeBron.
It doesn't happen.
Zion. Well, like those guys would make it something, but they won't do it.
It's more the younger guys. I don't expect LeBron at his age
not
to
now.
Do it. Exactly.
But he's never done it, really.
He never did. Yeah. He never went into it, and that was a big story. In 03, 04, you're like, when's he going to do it? He never did it. But Zion Williamson has to be in it. Like, he had to be in it, and he didn't. He pulled the chute, and I think it's partially because some guys get worried that that becomes your legacy. You're just the dunk guy, and that's going to be your biggest moment.
Which I wouldn't want either, Hayes.
I wouldn't want that
dunk.
Either, but that's on you to make sure that it's not. Right, like Jordan was the dunk guy, and then he won 6 titles and become the greatest of all time. That was his legacy. He didn't allow a dunk contest to determine who he was.
Yeah, but far more likely you end up being the dunk guy than like a multiple champion.
Than Michael
like
Jordan,
Zion,
of course.
Right?
Of course. But the younger guys, it was always, if you jump out of the gym and you want to boost your brand, that's how you do it. Like I remember, obviously, in 2000, probably the most famous dunk contest ever outside of maybe the Jordan one. That was Vince. And Vince was there. T-Mac was there. Steve Francis was in that. Like, there's 3 guys, top 10 picks. Like, they were up-and-coming next-wave stars that were all in the same competition and had to be in the same competition. And they even knew they weren't going to win. Like, they knew Vince was going to win it, but they're still like, I want to be a part of this, and I'm going to go out there. And maybe it's different because there's no crowd. Maybe it's different because of COVID and everyone kind of knew this year just was going to get swept under the rug and ultimately be forgotten. But I don't expect Zion to be there next year. No. I think that ship has sailed. And you're right. It's just not the same. The dunk contest is not what it once was. It's not even close. The Leafs are back in action tomorrow night. And we'll come back and catch up with Kristen Shilton. 9 of their next 23 games are against the Winnipeg Jets. 9 of their next 23.
Wow.
And this is essentially it for first place. Like, the Jets are behind them. The Jets, I believe, have a couple games in hand. Montreal could still make it interesting if Montreal gets hot and the Leafs and Montreal still play each other, I want to say 7 more times. So there is a chance there for the Habs to steal a couple of points and make it interesting. But there is a real chance here for the Leafs to basically end the discussion who's winning the division over the next month and a half.
And if you think about it, 9 games, if the Leafs win, like, the first 3, that will essentially, like, not let Winnipeg catch them.
Right.
You know, if they go 5-4 in the 9 games, but you can almost guarantee that by winning the first 3, it almost makes it impossible for Winnipeg to catch them. They'll be 13, 14 points behind. And they're not making that up in 25 games.
No way. There's not enough runway.
You can almost start knocking teams off. They can't catch us.
Yep.
They can't catch us. And they can do that with a hot run here.
They definitely can. And it's a double-edged sword for sure, right? Like, if Winnipeg goes 7-2, then all of a sudden they might be ahead of you or real close to it. Mm-hmm. So we'll come back and catch up with Kristen, and we'll get into that. We'll get you an update on Austin Matthews, his status. Joe Thornton was a topic of discussion in Vancouver. He didn't look great. What do we do with that top line moving forward, or what does Sheldon Keefe do with it? That and more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, race coming up just after 5 o'clock, and Kristen Shilton will join us here in just a moment. The Leafs are back in town and practicing earlier this afternoon. Back in action tomorrow night, Winnipeg in town. And as we mentioned prior to the break, they've got Winnipeg 9 times in the next 23 games. 9 of their next 23 games. So buckle up, get used to Mark Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois and Blake Wheeler and Neil Pionk and Connor Hellebuyck, like a healthy dose of Hellebuyck, and I'd have to look it up again, but I don't believe there's a back-to-back. So even scarier from that standpoint, you might get Hellebuyck 9 times in the next month and a half.
Laurent Brossoit has actually played better than Hellebuyck this year so far, so their backup's no slouch either. He's been really good.
Do you know how lucky you are Noodles isn't on this show for that comment? Do you know how lucky you are, Johnny? Oh, speak to him. Speak some knowledge to our boy here. Oh, we lost him. All right.
O's taking a moment.
He's having
you.
A moment. It's just the two of us.
He just liked my Hellebuyck take so bad, he went Noodles on me and hung up.
Yes.
I'm just saying, stats are stats, and he's been better than him so far this year. And the other guy to watch out for in Winnipeg, Nick Ehlers. This guy is dynamo. He's been so good.
Played outstanding. A little bit of bite in his game, too, like a couple of tilts.
Yeah. He's taking the next step. He was the talented guy that was, like, underachieving kind of. Were you guys just chirping me right there?
No, I called on you because I was asking you to speak some knowledge to our boy Johnny here because he had the audacity to say on this show in Noodle's spot that Laurent Brossoit has been playing better than Connor Hellebuyck. And I just said to him, you're lucky Noodles isn't here because he would somehow end up at your home and he'd be having
that's
a man
an Al's brother take that is just not acceptable. But I'll tell you what, Johnny, it's weird when
there he goes. Yeah, he's had enough. I don't know what we're going to do here, but this guy, Friday's Wi-Fi was a mess. Did you see that? Mike
Did
toss?
You see that disgusted toss of the headset?
I am so disappointed. We're not on TV right now.
Oh, my God. I wish you were on TV.
I can't express this enough, what you just missed. And I'm sure we'll have video of it. I don't think we'll post that because it would go viral quickly, but then he'd have to explain himself.
No, we have to post it.
We probably should. Yeah, we probably should because he just took his headset off so fast and fired it off the side of his wall as if it's the headset's fault. I mean, it's not the equipment. It clearly has got a Wi-Fi issue. The same thing popped up on Friday, but...
It was a full body reaction. Like, it was everything in it.
Everything, just pure rage, like internal rage. His face went red. His head is popping off.
He looked at the headset like it was back talking him.
Yeah,
like he was gonna say something.
Exactly. That was just. He was so mad.
Okay.
So anyway, we'll see if we can get him back. We'll see if his microphone still works.
He might need a moment though to cool down.
I think he might.
Also, hey, is my other bet I wanted to get in, we're getting the Leafs, Kristen, coming on. Wayne Simmonds on the ice today.
Right.
Okay? So I put on my detective hat. Mm-hmm. Did you see what he was wearing when he was skating?
I did not, no.
He was wearing the green stuff. The St. Paddy's Day green gear. So I'm thinking, St. Patrick's Day is March 17th?
Yep.
So I don't know when the Leafs St. Paddy's game is. It's got to be around there somewhere. So is he anticipating being back for that game? Why are you breaking in green gear?
That would be consistent with the timeline, right? Like
right.
They said a month and a half, give or take, and he's been out for about a month, and he was.
So
on the
I'm
ice
thinking
for the first
he plans
today.
On playing whenever St. Paddy's game is.
Yeah, that would make sense.
You know what it's like. Like it's a pain in the butt to break in new equipment. Like if you don't need to, like I don't want to break in new gloves. I don't want to break in new pants. They're all stiff. You don't feel the puck right. He's got a broken hand anyways. The last thing he wants to do is put in like this stiff new glove.
Right.
So the fact that he's wearing them for his skating sessions, that gives you a pretty clear indication of his timeline. If it's not that game, it's right around it.
So on top of that, where does he play when he comes back? Because
very good question.
I think the lineup is potentially in flux right now. And that's not to suggest panic or concern. I mean, yes, they lost two games in Vancouver. I thought Thatcher Demko played really well both games. And credit to Vancouver. You know, they're allowed to get up off the mat and play well. And you know, they played pretty well. And they kept the Leafs in check. And the Leafs still went 3-2 on a road trip. And as you know, Johnny, you go 600 on the road, especially considering where you are in the standings. You're fine. You move on. It's going to happen. They weren't going to run off win after win after win. But the lineup, there are certain things that I think Sheldon Keefe is likely circling, one of which is how long do you go with Joe Thornton on that top line, which is going to be a consistent discussion all year. There have been times he's looked really good, and there are other times where he looks his age and he's – at least a step behind, if not two steps behind. And more so when Matthews is struggling a little bit, and he is a little bit coming off the injury and he's still dealing with it, that's when you really need to rely on your line mates to kind of prop you up. And I'm not sure you can do that as much with Jumbo, with Joe Thornton right now. So that is a debate. The Engvall, Mikheyev, Hyman line has been dynamite.
Incredible.
Like, incredible. And Sheldon Keefe made a clear point on day one of camp. He wants a third line that he can rely on in that role. And I guess he originally envisioned Kerfoot playing in the middle of the ice.
Yeah.
I think Kerfoot's better as a winger. I think he is. I like Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander. I'm fine with that line. And if you're going to keep the Engvall line intact, where does Simmonds go when he returns? Because he's playing. I guess it would suggest maybe the fourth line. If Thornton can't keep up, though, he's going down likely to the fourth line. I don't think you can have Thornton, Spezza, Simmonds on your fourth line.
No. But
I don't think you can do that.
And the assumption, right, Hayes, would have been you scratch Jimmy Vesey.
Right. Now
like, that would have been the move. But now, did you see, do you know where he ranks in the team in even strength goals. He's fourth. Fourth.
Yeah.
He's the only behind Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. So, like, I don't know what else you're expecting out of a guy as far as production. I know there's other parts of the game, but if it's production, what else do you want? Like, you can't very well turn around and scratch him now. He's got to go cold. So I would bet Spezza goes in the middle. Boyd comes out of the lineup.
I think you're probably right about that. But and you on top of it, do you make a trade? If there's a trade and it's a player of consequence and impact, obviously he's going to move into the top six. Mm-hmm. All these are debatable topics. We have the O-Dog back. What's going on over there? Are we on eggshells today? Are we going to get through it or what?
What do you mean eggshells? What am I supposed to do if this stuff doesn't work? What do you? Why am I on it? I'm not on eggshells.
I'm not asking you. I'm wondering if we're going to be able to get through it. We had the issue on Friday, and what do you think the problem is right now? You diagnose it. Is it the Wi-Fi over there, the microphone?
Dude, I don't know, but here's what's going to happen today, okay? One more time.
Personal
one more time. It's not good for anybody involved. One more time. It's the last time, and tomorrow I have to drive in. And that's the way it's got to be.
Yeah, I guess that's an option. You know, you've been in. You're the only one of the three of us who have been in the studio.
Yeah, and I'm not going to deal with this again because nobody likes it, and people are like, "You're mailing it in," and it's just I don't need all the nonsense.
No,
so.
This is proof. You've been on, and it's dropped twice. Like we heard it. It just you were mid rant or mid conversation, and it dropped.
Yeah, I forget what I was saying too, but it was probably something really good. Who knows? We're not even on TV today, are we?
No, we're not. So we didn't see, like, the microphone throw. Johnny and I caught, but the audience didn't see. So there is video of that technically, but if that was on TV.
It exists. Yes.
That would have been quite the visual.
I'd like to share it with the masses because it is fantastic. Because the Wi-Fi might be an issue, but at this point I wonder how the headphones are if they're in one piece.
Holding on by a thread.
Well, in frustration, what else are you supposed to do? Like, I'm here by myself. There's nobody to kind of, like, I was just like, I've had it with this apparatus, and the only thing I could think of was grab the earphones and throw them on the floor. I don't know. I don't even bother posting it because the hurt feelings crowd, somebody's not going to like it.
No one's going to like that. Someone's going to be a big microphone supporter and they're going to be offended.
No, an earphone lover. An earphone lover. The guy from Something About Mary will like it, and he's like, you can't do that.
Yeah,
so.
We can't have it. We can't have it. So we'll keep that to ourselves, but at some point we'll bring it to the masses. But we were talking about Wayne Simmonds on the ice today. The potential for the blender to come out into the future, Joe Thornton, where does he play? Do you keep that Engvall line intact? And 9 of the next 23 are against Winnipeg, including tomorrow night. And to chat about it all, someone who covers the team closely was down at the rink today. Here is our TSN 1050 Maple Leaf reporter, Kristen Shilton. Kristen, Johnny has a theory that Wayne Simmonds wearing the St. Paddy's uniforms is an indication that he will be returning for that game, or that is what he is eyeing in about 10 days, 12 days, whatever it is. Would you share that report with Johnny, or do you have a different viewpoint on the return of Wayne Simmonds?
Well, to be honest, that was one of my first thoughts as well when I saw him in that gear, because every other player on the ice was breaking in the pants and the gloves and the socks and all that, and so was Wayne Simmonds. So he's at least preparing for the possibility that he will need that equipment come St. Paddy's game time. So that would put him pretty much on track for 6 weeks, which is what they originally estimated he would miss with the broken wrist. And he's been skating for the last week, we were told, and if things continue to progress well and he's feeling good, I would think those St. Pat's games would be an appropriate point for him to look at and say, hey, maybe I'll be able to get back then. But as you were saying, Hayes, the Leafs, then they're going to have to make some decisions about where he's going to fit back into the lineup and who's going to come out to make room for him as well.
Kristen, it's difficult to get any kind of vibe for this team because you're not allowed the access that's usually allowed. But two losses against Vancouver, who's not a very good team right now. The media, the fans are probably another loss away from going total Toronto media on this situation. Can you get any sense from coaches or players, just kind of any type of urgency coming up for tomorrow night?
You know, I thought today was one of their better practice days and Joe Thornton and Sheldon Keefe both said the same thing. I thought there was a lot more energy to this practice, urgency, just a sense that you know, even just coming from Keith, like at one point they were doing a 3-on-0 drill and he wasn't seeing enough shooting. And so you see him just yelling out, like, shoot the blank and puck, shoot the puck. Like, why, you know, and that's not necessarily something that Keith always does. But, you know, when he is really getting animated and you could see the response from the players, that's, you know, it's not how it goes for every practice. But I thought today was just different in that sense where you could feel a little bit more of that urgency and that desire to get it right and to be crisp and to be, you know, you could see guys talking to each other more on the ice, which doesn't always happen during drills. Guys will just go back to their corners and start again, but you could see conversations and a lot of time at the whiteboard as well. So I think, as you say, it's harder when you don't get to talk one-on-one with the players the way we used to, but just from the body language on the ice today, I do think that they take this little slump seriously. And from the conversations we had after, it definitely, there's a sense of reset and this, you know, like they're going in a different direction now in terms of getting back to those details of the game that made them successful before.
Kristen, you talk about body language and energy. How did Austin Matthews look out there? Any more insight into how he's feeling? You know, he's back. He hasn't scored in a couple of games. That's not a big deal. But, you know, it seems like the wrist is still bothering him a little bit. It's going to be an ongoing situation. Any updates on how he's feeling? Is he shooting the puck normally, taking faceoffs in practice, whatever it might be that would let you think that his wrist is improving at least?
Yeah, you know, I thought he was shooting the puck harder today, but the one sign is just that usually in practice he's scoring like crazy. Like he's going up and down the ice and he's putting the puck in and you're seeing him shoot it, I think, with more authority and more confidence, but it wasn't going in at practice. Now that's just one day, right? Like that's just one practice out of many, but you could just maybe tell he doesn't have quite the same handle on the shot as he normally would. And Sheldon Keefe said that after as well, that, you know, it's affecting his shot. There's no way around that. And they had to move him on the power play. You could see him not being in those same shooting situations as maybe you would before when he's feeling 100%, just because he's not totally confident about being able to put it in the net right now. So he himself said, I needed to heal a little bit more. I needed to progress a little bit better. And there's other elements of his game that he can bring out. He's obviously able to set up his line mates. He still put 15 shots on net over these three games, which was more than any other player for the Leafs did. So he's still able to generate. It's really just the command of the puck. Like when it leaves his stick, it's flying over the net a lot more than it usually does, or he's not elevating it the same way. And it's just ending up in the goalie's path. Like that's kind of, it's high or it's low, but it's not going exactly where he wants it. And I'm sure that's very frustrating for him, but the fact that he's shooting it harder than we've seen at practice more recently, I think that's a good sign that he's going in the right direction. Now it's just about getting that, you know, getting the accuracy and getting the directionality of it back to where it was before.
With our TSN 1050 Maple Leaf reporter, Kristen Chilton, the Leafs back in action tomorrow night, Winnipeg in town. 9 of the next 23 for the Leafs are against Winnipeg. We'll get to that in just a moment. Like, that's clearly a COVID-related stat. I mean, we're never going to see that ever again in NHL history, more than likely. But it's going to be significant based on where both teams currently sit in the standings. But Joe Thornton, you know, came more and more into the focus as the road trip went on. Saturday night, he had a tough night, which he's allowed to have. Every player is going to have over the course of a season. But his age comes into the rear view a little bit more when he looks like he's a step behind, if not a step and a half behind. And Keefe caught a lot of people off guard when day one he put him on a line with Matthews and Marner. And he came on this show and he told the media and he explained he wants Thornton to feel important. And in order for that to be the case, he felt like he had to play him in an important position. He has done that. He's established that. I have not been of the belief that that was a commitment for 56 games in every single playoff game. So what is your read on that situation, Kristen, in terms of where Thornton could end up, you know, 10 games from now, 20 games from now? And if it's not on that top line, how much flexibility do you really have considering his age and style of play?
Yeah, I think that's, there was definitely an element of surprise to Thornton starting with Matthews and Marner the way that he did. And I actually thought, you know, the chemistry between them has been pretty good. But as you say, I think the difference in age and what Thornton can bring on a consistent night-in, night-out basis when you're playing every other day, that's where now that we're approaching the halfway point on Thursday here for the Leafs of their season, it is a bit of a question mark of can Thornton sustain what they're doing on a game-to-game basis if there is a long playoff run, especially ahead for Toronto. What does that mean for him? And I think Zach Hyman is always kind of Keith's security blanket. He can always put him up on that line, and you know that Hyman is going to deliver whatever you need. But Hyman has played so well on that third line, and that's really actually been your most consistent line over these last couple of games. So do you want to disrupt the chemistry there? Do you have to keep Thornton where he is just, you know, to kind of be able to allow that third line to continue to grow and to continue to be as consistent as they've been? So the answer on Thornton, I feel like it's going to continue to be a game-by-game decision for Keith. I mean, we see the way that, you know, Hyman is still taking shifts on the top line pretty much every night, as it is when Thornton will miss shifts here and there, especially in the third period, or when if the Leafs here are down and chasing a game. So I think until Simmons is back and until you figure out if this third line is for real, if this is something that you can keep together for a long time, and then when Simmons comes back and you figure out where he fits, perhaps at that point you move Thornton. But right now, Keith seems very committed to it, and whether he's committed to it because he doesn't see a viable option to replace Thornton with there, or if it's that he made Thornton a promise of sorts and he wants to continue to allow the chemistry to grow there, I think that we'll see. But certainly when he was asked about it, when Keith was asked about that line after Saturday's loss, he wasn't willing to concede anything about Thornton playing there, about how he didn't like that line. Even though, as you say, he did, Thornton did have a tough night. Keith actually kind of bristled and was a little bit like, no, I don't think there was anything wrong with that line. They had great chances. A couple of them go in. You're not asking me the question about how they played. So for right now, at least, I think you'll see status quo. But when Simmons comes back, I do think that there's going to have to be a bit of a reckoning there with what that top line is going to look like going forward.
And Kristen, if they're committed to that third line, as you mentioned, and it's looked good so far, and Engvall has never really played center, but he's figuring it out on the fly, that means Alex Kerfoot has to play somewhere else. Right now, it's in the top six. How is Kerfoot feeling about playing on the wing? And maybe more importantly, how does Sheldon Keefe feel about Kerfoot playing on the wing higher up in the lineup?
You know, it's quite funny because Keith was asked earlier, I guess it would have been last month, you know, have you thought about moving Kerfoot to the wing? And he just shut the question down. He was like, no, haven't thought about it. It's not a thing. And then it was literally two games later, suddenly Kerfoot's on the wing, and he's been there ever since.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think it's where Keith sees him because I don't think he expected that Engvall was going to step in and be maybe as strong as he's been at center playing with Mikheyev and Hyman. I think that has changed the idea of where Kerfoot fits in. And it hasn't come out exactly that Keith thinks, oh, he's going to stay on the wing or he's better on the wing necessarily. All he's really said is that Kerfoot is more comfortable on his strong side, playing obviously the left wing, so they've moved Nylander to the right to accommodate him. But that's really the extent of the insight in terms of whether he sees him staying on the wing, whether he sees him staying or going back to center at some point. There hasn't been, it doesn't seem like Keith wants to commit to saying one way or the other where this will go in the future. But in the past, he's definitely, Kerfoot has said, you know, I want to be at center. That's obviously where he sees himself. But I think it's hard to argue at this point that playing the wing has been better for him in terms of what he's been able to generate and where he's looked better. I mean, he just was stumbling a bit at center earlier on, and the chemistry wasn't the same as it's been for that third line since Engvall's come there. And Keith did say at the beginning of the year his idea of the third line was going to be Mikheyev, Kerfoot and Hyman. That's really what he wanted that line to be. But it's been Engvall who's really created, I think, what Keefe envisioned that line to be. And then, weirdly, Kerfoot has gone up to play with Tavares and Nylander. And that's actually worked out well for Tavares and Nylander because they've played better since he's come up there than they were previously when it was like Jimmy Vesey or whomever else trying to fill in that role for Simmons. So, again, once Simmons comes back, I don't know how you move around with Kerfoot. Does he push Engvall out? Does it push someone on the fourth line out? How is this all going to shake out? If the Leafs stay healthy, we could be talking about more injuries at any time as well. But I think for right now, Keith hasn't committed to anything where it comes to Kerfoot about where he's not really on the record saying, you know, this is where I see him or this is where I like him best. Because you don't want to paint yourself in a corner again when you said, you know, I don't think about moving him to the wing ever. And I think for Kerfoot, he's probably disappointed that things haven't gone better for him at center, but at least he's still playing a pretty prominent role with two really good players on that Tavares line.
Well, Kristen, as I've been referencing all hour, 9 of the next 23 against Winnipeg. So good luck getting creative with all that. I don't know what you're going to do. By game 4 or 5, you're just going to say, I don't know, watch the game and we'll figure it out, I guess.
Exactly.
It's not going to be easy, but it'll be fun. Nonetheless, two good teams back at it tomorrow night. Always great to have you on. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks so much, guys.
There's Kristen Chilton, our TSN 1050 Maple Leaf reporter. Covers
Arizona.
The team.
Arizona play St. Louis like seven times
in a row. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
7 in a row.
Like, nasty playoff series, let's go. Regular season,
No. And there wasn't much nastiness. I'm not sure there was a fight. I don't know if there was a big hit. Johnny, you'd probably know better than I would.
Yeah.
Both of you guys would.
No, the games were just kind of grinded out games. They're games like middle of February games. But they just happened to go one after another, and they were all kind of close and low scoring. It was just
brutal.
Johnny, desperate to see somebody else.
Yeah, you would think that, like, you think about the 9 games in the next 23 with these two teams, like, really make a statement, let them know you're there. I've already got it in my head that's not going to happen. It's like, it's just maybe a couple blowouts, the animosity disappears. Somebody mentioned it, and I don't know who it was, that playing each other so much, you just lose the animosity where it takes away from it where it's like,
There's no buildup. Yeah, it's not like we haven't seen you in 3 months and we've been waiting for it. It's like we see it tomorrow and then next week twice. And there is one potential rivalry that may actually continue to go old school. I think most of you would know which one I'm talking about. Features a guy who just got suspended for 7 games. We'll come back and talk about that.
Wow.
And Tom Wilson getting 7. What could happen in the future between Washington and Boston? Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, race coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get back into Bryson DeChambeau lighting up Bay Hill yesterday. It's a bit of a stretch, but if you shoot under par on Sunday at Bay Hill, you play pretty well. He wins another tournament. The Players this week. Ooh. We're a month away from Masters week. As well, month today is
the Players.
Monday.
The Players, though, is so legit. My favorite golf course in the world. I've played it probably 30 times. I've birdied every hole, but I don't want to pump my own tires. I'm in love with the Players.
It's a little late for that.
How many times have you put it in the water on 17?
17? Not many. It's an easy hole, man. You look at it, it's a 138-yard pitching wedge. It's not that hard. My best round was 74 from the tippies. I eagled 16 and birdied 17.
Look at you, DeChambeau, Shooter McGavin, the old dog. I love it.
You know what? Actually, we went down there one time with the Leafs. We were going between like Tampa and Florida or whatever, between games, and we went over there for a round. And it was great. And, of course, everyone just sits on 17 for the whole team, just like who's going to – you know, who can hit it on the green, who can miss, or whatever. And without the pressure, and if it's not windy, it's like
I couldn't play that course. I couldn't play that course like people doing that. It's an hour and a half hold up. There's a group. It's the weirdest name. They call themselves the Munchkins. And the Munchkins tee off every time at Sawgrass. First time's off. They're like 7 or 8 guys, and they go. And they're fast players, and they're done in two and a half hours. But you get that course 11 o'clock on a Friday with every guy shooting 12 balls off the 17th. Get lost, man. No way.
Oh, you know you're hitting a provisional from the tee. You're not going to a drop area on 17.
No.
You're just not doing it. Like when we played up at what's it called? Where we went up and played this past year, where Rob's got us in there.
Wooden sticks.
Yeah, they've got the replica. I did the same thing. I launched a Scud missile over the green, and I was like, I'm hitting again. Like I'm not dropping somewhere. I'm hitting again. Like it's an island green. It's a cool green. It's a replica of TPC. And the second one, I think I threw a little dart in there and tapped in for a legit four. But
actually, I have a good memory. You went off the back of the green and you were up against the fringe.
I did, and
you were right by the pathway to walk off the green.
It was shocking this thing survived, Johnny. This thing was held up by like an inch of blade of
grass. I was just listening to you. I'm like, this jerk better not say he hit a dart the second one, because it was a Scud missile too.
It was. It was worse than the first one, but it held up somehow. I think it hit like a piece of like a block
caught
of
the wood
stanchion, and exactly, and it died on me. And somehow I wiggled it down, and I think I took a double. Asterisk double. It might have been a triple. Anyway, Rays coming up, and we'll get back into the Leafs. There's a lot of hockey stories. We'll touch on the Tom Wilson suspension. 7 games for that hit on Brandon Carlo. What it's going to mean for that rivalry in the future. That has been the most heated rivalry by a lot, because those two teams are big. They don't like each other. They're good. They know where they're going. So we'll get into that more coming up. A rumor courtesy of Ryan Russillo. It's not even a rumor. I guess it's a report about what Kyle Lowry has been telling people throughout the NBA for the better part of a month as well. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, online, tsn1050.ca.